नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायण।
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 10, texts 15 and 16. What is written there?
Mridanga shankha beryascha, veena panava gomukhaha, dundhuryanaka ghantadya, नेदुर्दुन्दुब यस्तथा मृदंग शंख वेर्यश्च वीणा पणव गोमुकाः धुन्धुर्यानक घंटाद्या नेदुन्दुर्भय नेदुर् दुन्दुभयस्तथा मृदंग शंख धैर्यश्च वीणा पणव गोमुखाः धुन्धुर्यानक घंटाद्या नेदुर्दुन्दुभयस्तथा।
The palace of Hastinapur, different types of drums like the mridangas, dola, nagra, dunduri and dundubhi and flutes of different types, the veena, gomukha and bheri all sounded together to show him honor. Text number 16.
Prasadashikararudhaha कुरुनार्यो विदृक्षया विवृक्षु कुसुमै कृष्णं प्रेमवीडास्मितेक्षणाः।
Out of a loving desire to see the Lord, the royal ladies of the Kurus got up on the top of the palace and smiling affection and shyness, they showered flowers upon the Lord. Purport by His Divine Grace, Isi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki. Shyness is a particular extra natural beauty of the fair sex and it commands respect from the opposite sex. This custom was observed even during the days of the Mahabharata, that is more than 5000 years ago. It is only the less intelligent persons, not well versed in the history of the world, who say that the observance of separation of female and male is an introduction of the Mohammedan period in India. This incident from the Mahabharata period proves definitely that the ladies of the palace observed a strict parda, restricted association with men, and instead of coming down in the open air where Lord Krishna and others were assembled, the ladies of the palace went up on the top of the palace and from there paid their respects to Lord Krishna by showers of flowers. It is definitely stated here that the ladies were smiling there on the top of the palace, checked by shyness. This shyness is a gift of nature to the fair sex, and it enhances their beauty and prestige. Even if they are of a less important family, or even if they are less attractive. We have practical experience of this fact. A sweeper woman commanded the respect of many respectable gentlemen simply by manifesting a lady's shyness. Half naked ladies in the street do not command any respect, but a shy sweeper's wife commands respect from all. Human civilization, as conceived of by the sages of India, is to help one free himself from the clutches of illusion. The material beauty of a woman is an illusion, because actually the body is made of earth, water, fire, air, etc. But because there is the association of the living spark with matter, it appears to be beautiful. No one is attracted by an earthen doll, even if it is most perfectly prepared to attract the attention of others. The dead body has no beauty, because no one will accept the dead body of a so-called beautiful woman. Therefore, the conclusion is that the spirit spark is beautiful, and because of the soul's beauty, one is attracted by the beauty of the outward body. The Vedic wisdom therefore forbids us to be attracted by false beauty. But because we are now in the darkness of ignorance, the Vedic civilization allows very restricted mixing of woman and man. They say that the woman is considered to be the fire and the man is considered to be the butter. The butter must melt in association with fire, and therefore they may be brought together only when it is necessary. And shyness is a check to the unrestricted mixing. It is nature's gift and it must be utilized. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuh Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. We are reading from the chapter Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwaraka. So here Lord Shri Krishna is leaving Hastinapur for Dwaraka, and how such a grand send-off is being given when the Lord is taking leave. That is very vividly explained here. In the Vedic lifestyle, the etiquettes are never rejected as formalities, unnecessary formalities. In the modern times, people often say, I don't want to have any formalities. You know, make it simple, no formalities. Like, you know, even marriages nowadays, people say, you know, we don't want to make it a big affair. We don't want to make it a big formality. We just go to the office and get registered, marriage registered. That's good enough. But such people do not know why in the Vedic times they would celebrate marriage almost for a week or so, even a decade ago. Marriage means 1 week at least. You know, 3 days preparation for the marriage and the middle day marriage, and after the marriage 3 more days. By the time relatives, everyone leaves, it's like a very big, like Bhagavad Saptah, which we celebrated for a week. It's like that. Why it was like that? Actually, there are many ceremonies every day. I personally got to witness many of the things they do. Every day there are many shlokas to be recited, and there are events that take place. It's all organized like that. So, all those rituals and rites and the performances are all there in order to make the husband and wife understand that it is not a joke to get married. It's a serious business. It's a service to God, it's a serious business, and we are coming together, and all the society has come here. And all this is being witnessed by the demigods, by the Supreme Lord, by great saints, and sages, by so many relatives and friends in society. So, when they perform yajna, they take commitment, they take oaths, with all that. And then, even if there is a quarrel between husband and wife, they would never even consider divorce. Because they know it's a serious thing. It's a sacred vow. But modern people have degraded to the level of thinking, is marriage really necessary? Like you see, in America the divorce rate is almost 75% of the marriages within the first 3 years of marriage. But now you will hear the new statistics, which is less than 50% diverse. Do you think Americans have become more religious now? No. The divorce rate has reduced because the marriages are only not happening. They are simply living together. So because they are saying, what is the need of this formality? We don't need to get married. You know, we have faith in each other, we love each other, we have accepted each other in the heart. So we just live together, no problem. That is their answer. Once a disciple was asking Prabhupada, Swamiji, is it enough if one accepts a guru in the heart and need not have the formality of taking diksha? Prabhupada immediately understood his mentality. Why he does not want to take diksha? Because if you take diksha, you have to obey the guru. That is why he is asking, is it enough to accept in the heart? So Prabhupada told him, laughed and said, why do you have to keep a plate of prasad in the front and eat? Why don't you eat at heart? That's telling. So, marriage also is performed, it shouldn't be considered a mere formality, because it is actually a oath one takes in front of God. Similarly, all the other formalities also cannot be ignored. Sometimes people feel, what is the need of so many formalities, rules for everything? No. The purpose behind these formalities and rituals and rites should be understood, which is progress in Krishna consciousness. Like when I had gone to Krishna Smaran Prabhu's program, Udupi, on the last day, when we were leaving, he made it a very big formality, They had brought a big plate full of this much of fruits, there were bananas and coconut and whatnot, all kinds of fruits, and a big sum of money, and big packets of dry fruits, some shawl, some dhoti kurta, so many items. And he was speaking about our visit, although it was a brief visit. And all of them standing up and offering obeisances and coming and sending us off. So it almost took probably 45 minutes or so, 1 hour or so. We were thinking, what is the need of this formality? But he is very famous for following the etiquettes very strictly, very carefully. Because without following those etiquettes and formality, one cannot make progress in Krishna consciousness internally. It is not possible. Although these are external activity, those external formality and rituals, they give you internal progress. It's a very amazing principle. That also awakens respect, trust and love in the hearts of many others. Like His Holiness Jayadeva Swami Maharaj is leaving for Bombay this morning. So, if there's all the seniors, they go for sending off, you offer him garland, you offer him prasad, you offer obeisances, there is chanting of the holy name. So then all the devotees naturally come. It awakens the respect in the heart of everyone, and that respect gives them Krishna conscious progress. So this is the secret. So in Vedic life, nothing is meaningless. Imagine if somebody says, a night only I told Tata to Maharaj, by the way, tomorrow morning you are going, Vakya Maharaj, thank you very much. Your lecture was very nice. And then everyone is sitting in the temple hall and we are all chanting rounds. And then we tell the driver Prabhu, take Maharaj and take him to station, put him in the train and come. If you do that, of course we may save our time for chanting Hare Krishna, but we will hardly make any progress in Krishna consciousness. Nobody will develop respect, and also everyone will feel that there is no importance of formality. Then everyone will give up all the formalities and we will become simply degraded. You understand? So in this way, although in Vedic life many activities appear external, they have a very deep meaning behind them. That's why one should not neglect the formalities. Like you see Dhruva Maharaj, sees in front of him the Vaikuntha airplane has descended and the Vishnu Dutas are all standing ready to receive Dhruva Maharaj. What does Dhruva Maharaj do? He goes to all the brahmanas, he offers obeisances, he gives them charity. Of course he takes a bath, purifying bath, he chants the mantras. All the necessary formalities he finishes, and then he comes to the Vishnudutas to board the plane. Even at that time. So in many instances in Srimad Bhagavatam we can show how these formalities are given a very great importance, knowing well that they will lead to progress in Krishna consciousness. Here Lord Krishna is living for Dwaraka. What is because of ordinary people, when Lord Krishna is living for Dwaraka, naturally he is the most adored and respected person in the hearts of everyone. So practically the whole palace is emptied. Everyone is coming out. The men, the women, the common citizens, all coming and offering gifts, offering obeisances according to their relationships, dealing with Krishna. There is no other business. Everyone has given up all other business. And everyone has come here and assembled. You should see this picture in one of the books I saw. When Krishna is leaving for Dwaraka, such a beautiful picture it is. Nobody has any other business to do. Krishna is their only business. Everyone is coming to see for sending off Krishna. So at that time, everyone according to their relationship with Krishna should act accordingly. One should not act whimsically or according to one's whims and fancies. One should act according to one's position, befitting one's position. Like Yudhishthira Maharaj is accepting obeisances from Krishna. Arjuna is coming and clasping Krishna's hands. And Nakula and Sahadeva are coming and offering namaskar to Krishna. And there are different people coming and offering gifts. And also coming and speaking very fitting words according to their relationship with Krishna. Accordingly. And here, as everyone is behaving with Krishna in a certain way, how the women behaved with Krishna, that is also explained. Sometimes a sannyasi or a spiritual master comes, and sometimes a woman comes running to Maharaj, 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 and in the front of Maharaj, goes so close to Maharaj, and Maharaj is afraid. He goes behind. Okay, what do you want? And then you will tell a man, you know, find out what she wants. She is just dashing on me, you know. Seems she is going to fall on me. So that is a lack of etiquette. One doesn't know how to behave with other people. So here Krishna is going to go to Dwaraka. Not that all the women are coming and surrounding him and are shaking hands with him like in modern times they do. So they don't do that. You don't find. Where are the women? They go to the rooftop. They go to the top of the roof and they offer flowers. Because such a etiquette was known to them, as given in the Vedas. Because if the Shastras, whatever design is given in the Shastras for the society, the plan given is so perfect. Shastras don't say that women should be in the ground level and men should go to the top. Otherwise they will all be watching from the top. Which woman is looking how? Isn't it? So the reverse is said. Women should go to the top and men should be down. Although we will find that the Vedas talk of woman's subordinate position to man. We will certainly talk about that. Although woman in the Vedic texts are said to be subordinate to man in a family, still they are said that they should go to the rooftop. And from there they should shower flowers. So one has to simply follow what the Vedas say. Like see in Vrindavan temple we have a facility in the top. So a woman can go to the top and take darshan in Prabhupada Samadhi, if you see. Yeah. So Prabhupada here is highlighting on one essential quality of a woman, which is shyness. Prabhupada is calling it nature's gift, ornament, and which increases the prestige, respect for woman and all these things. And that should be utilized, Prabhupada says. It's very essential for a woman. And Prabhupada, taking into account the nature of a modern woman, that's why he's saying here, half-naked ladies in the street do not command any respect, but a shy sweeper's wife commands respect from all. So in the modern times, many women, as Prabhupada says here, not properly dressed, and they want to assume an equal position with man. So this is explained. There was a letter sent to BTG by one girl, by one woman, saying that I have been reading your Back to Godhead magazines and now I have read Prabhupada books. Now, at last I am convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I want to be dedicated to your movement. But my only reservation is that it seems that in your society, you don't value women. You consider them lesser than men. So, I want a clarification. So she wrote. So, in response to that, Jayadrath Swami wrote a letter in Back to Godhead magazine. In response, giving very beautifully the understanding given in the Vedic texts. So he says how, according to the Vedas, there is no distinction between man and woman on a spiritual platform. Both are equally respected. Pandita, Samadarshina. A learned person is supposed to see everyone equally, whether it be a man or a woman. What to speak of a woman? Even an animal, like a dog or a dog eater or elephant, is supposed to see everyone equally. On a spiritual platform, there is no distinction. But still, on the material platform, there is a great distinction. Once Prabhupada was asking, for example, if you call a learned person and tell him, okay, sir, sit right next to your dog, he will feel insulted. Isn't it? Because you may say, a learned person doesn't see difference between a dog and a dog eater and a gentle brahmana and an elephant and all that. But if you tell a learned person that you sit next to your dog, you know, so it will be an insult to him. You know that a learned person will be given a chair to sit and a dog will be kept at the doorstep only. Because they have their respective places. Why? Because materially there is a difference. There is a distinction. Also, in one of the talks with a reporter, a female reporter in America, when Prabhupada was talking, so she was asking, Swamiji, why do you make difference between man and woman? They should have equal rights. So Prabhupada was saying, when a man unites with a woman, then a woman becomes pregnant. Can you say that both of them should equally become pregnant? Half child from man and half child from woman? No, one becomes pregnant and the other doesn't become. Immediately you understand there is a distinction on a material platform between man and woman. Their mentalities are different. Their nature is different. Physically also their bodies are different. It's not the same. The bodily structures of man and woman are so created that women have, in general, a weak body. Sometimes people show a picture of a woman who is a body builder or a weightlifter, you know. Those are very rare. We are talking about generally, in general, about man and woman. Because those women don't look much different from the weightlifting men. They look very similar, if you see that. But in general, women have a weak physique and men have a stronger physique. In London, Prabhupada saw a police officer woman who was arguing with him. Why do you people think women are lesser? And Prabhupada told her that if I capture your hand and I snatch you, what can you do? Prabhupada asked her. You can only cry, isn't it? Because you don't have physical strength. And Prabhupada was joking with her like that. And Prabhupada told her, on the other hand, if there is a hooligan, or some gunda who is trying to create some trouble somewhere, a police can snatch him, catch him and slap him and beat him and do all that. Because man has that kind of physique. So, even physically, materially speaking, we can see that there is a clear-cut distinction between a man's body and woman's body. And the mentality of man and woman is very clearly presented in the Vedas. So when she was arguing, what is the need that women have to become subordinate to man? Prabhupada said, this kind of system is made by God, that when women agree to be faithful, chaste, and subordinate to man, then man becomes ready to take charge of them. Immediately. And man becomes ready to provide all facilities, all necessities of woman, whatever she needs, when she becomes faithful, chaste, and subordinate. Just like there is a distinction between parents and children. When children obey the parents, then the parents provide all the necessities for the children. Or like we have the relationship between a manager and an assistant. A manager has one role to play and assistant or a secretary has another role to play. So manager gives some ideas, instructions, and the assistant is playing a role, and both of them can accomplish a very great job in a company. Similarly, Prabhupada said, if a woman agrees to be faithful and chaste and subordinate to a man, and man takes charge of her and does everything necessary for her. On the other hand, if a woman refuses to be subordinate and she wants to be equal, it's like a secretary saying, I also want the manager's seat. If they both want to be equal, then a man loses all his cool head. He becomes upset, and because of that, there may be turmoil. A man may impregnate a woman and give her a child, and he may go away. He may walk off due to the quarrel, and then woman is burdened with the child, and then naturally she will burden the government. So this reporter was asking Prabhupada, why can't woman be independent? Okay, although she is, just because she is begetting a child, so she has to become subordinate. So why can't she live without the support of a man? Prabhupada said, no. If she doesn't take support from the man, she has to take support from the government. So is it a nice idea? Prabhupada asked. Woman becoming burden to the government, that now I have children and I have no one to protect me. Let government give millions of dollars support to woman. So Prabhupada said, just see. But the Vedic system is very perfect. One woman with her children is given protection by one man. Similarly, everyone in the society is taken care. See, the Vedas make always a perfect plan. Like you see, the rains that is coming from the nature by performance of yajna, it takes care of all the necessity of water of all the living entities. But now, when the man doesn't perform yajna, and when there is no rain, imagine how are you going to reach water to everyone. You store water, and through municipality you have to reach water to everyone. You cannot reach. But if you take the help of rains, every living entity can get the water. Similarly, if all living beings follow the Vedic standard, then all women along with their children and dependents will be protected by their husbands. And because of that type of psychology that man has, or man and woman have, the respective psychology. Prabhupada says, a man should be servant of the servant of the servant of servant, 100 times servant of guru. And a woman should be like a servant maid of her husband. Then family will be perfect. Then there will be no problem. So this is the Vedic standard. But when both the parties demand equal rights, in the name of trying to artificially become equal on a material platform, and such equality never exists at all. That can exist only in material conception when there is a competitive mentality, exploitative mentality, where both the parties are trying to supersede one another and try to acquire the position and power and domination over the others. And that kind of competitive mentality is what that leads to quarrel and misunderstanding and ending up in divorce, which we commonly see in the modern times. And materially also, there is some superiority and subordinateness. For example, a cat is physically weak, but a cub is physically very strong. You can see that. For example, if you say, take a lion and an elephant, lion is more ferocious and stronger than the elephant, although elephant has a big body. You see that. So we can find, although the spirit soul is there in every body, there is certainly physical difference between one living being and another. And from the material point of view, there is difference. Similarly, there is difference between man and woman. And the mentality of man and woman is made in a certain way. Unless one follows the Vedic formula, one can certainly end up in trouble. Like it is said, the male has a male ego, which is, in material conception, that male ego is very strong. When one becomes a devotee, the more one becomes purified, one can clearly see those things. But when one is not a pure devotee, an average man in society has the male ego, because of which he will always expect his wife, children to be subordinate to him. And as Prabhupada says, if the wife is very intelligent, she doesn't just marry the man, but she marries the male ego of the man. Which means, by marrying with the ego of the husband, she perfectly knows how to please him and thus bring him under her control. That is explained in the Vedas. Just like the Lord's devotees, by their faithfulness and loyalty and purity in performance of devotional service, bring even the Supreme Lord, who is called as Ajita, who is unconquerable, under their control. Exactly like a Pativrata Nari, she brings her gentle husband under her control by her chastity and purity and faithful service. So the example of Draupadi can be given in this. Once when Satyabhama came along with Krishna to the forest to meet the Pandavas and Draupadi, Krishna was busy with the Pandavas talking about the political affairs, while naturally women are not so interested in politics. So she, Satyabhama, went to meet Draupadi and asked her, how do you manage to keep all your 5 husbands happy? It's so difficult for a woman to keep one husband happy. You must be really an expert. So please give me some lessons from your experience. This is Guhya Makyati Prachati. Learning from an experienced person, how to do things better. So Draupadi begins explaining various things. She says how your wife should consider the husband like God, and one should completely be dedicated to the service of the husband, and she should be pure and chaste, and never give any opportunity for any suspicion in the husband's mind. Her chastity should be so pure. And she should be ready to serve the husband with her body, mind and words all day. And she didn't say a woman should do this. She said, I do these things, she said. Whatever I do, I will tell you, and then if you find any good lessons, you take it. That's what she said. She said, I am the last one to sleep at home after serving everyone. This reminds me of one incident in Mahabharata, where when the Rajasuya Yajna was held, millions of people had come for that. It is said in every hall, every huge hall, when they would be taking prasad, when 50,000 people are over, then they would blow the conch shell. They would blow the conch shell. Which means nobody else should enter the hall now. Now they have to go to the next hall. And again 50,000 people will sit there. Again they will blow the conch. So, in this way, Draupadi was the main person who was making all arrangements for cooking and serving. After everyone was served, at last, she was the last one to take. So she said, a wife should be ready like that to serve. And she was the last one to go to sleep in the night. And she said, and I am the first one to get up in the morning, before everyone else gets up. And by the time the husbands get ready and come, she's already ready. She's taken bath. Yeah, wife is called as a Griha Lakshmi. She should be actually inspiring the husband to become religious also. She should give him encouragement and motivation to become more spiritual minded and religious. That's her duty. Not that lying in the bed and asking for bed coffee. Go and make bed coffee and bring. So, she also said, when my husband is at home, I dress very beautifully, very decorate myself very nicely, only for the pleasure of the husband. And when he is away, then I dress in a very simple way, like an ascetic. And when the husband is away, that's a golden opportunity to devote more time for my Krishna consciousness. I devote all my time for the Lord's service. Because when the husband is at home, there are so many things to be done, services. But when he is away for some kind of war or political event or anything, then there is time. Then I devote more time in reciting shlokas and learning more Krishna consciousness. So she said many things like that. There are almost a dozen things she says like this. Very interesting. So, of course, Satyabhama very carefully noted down everything, what she heard from Draupadi. But of course, Satyabhama's nature didn't change much, because that is a spiritual nature, to be adamant and to become angry and give pleasure to Krishna in that way. But still, those lessons are for the people of the world, for women to learn. And also she says, a woman should be shy. In the Vedic life, it's very well known that when special guests are coming, immediately all the women at home will go inside. The mother, daughter and all of them will go inside. Only the man will be outside. And the man will receive the guests and make them sit. And sometimes he will call his wife, please come. And then she may come, you know, she may cover her head and come. He will introduce her or whatever. He may call his daughter. But such kind of shyness is gradually becoming unseen nowadays in modern times. Like sometimes you go to a house, you batter the door. And the first voice you hear is a woman. Who is that? You open the door and then you find a woman is coming with a t-shirt and a jeans and sitting. You said, what do you want? You ask, where is her husband? He's washing clothes. He'll come. Sometimes, you know. Tell me, what do you want? Why do you need him? Because sometimes women feel we can better take control of home. Husband is not so intelligent, you know. He's little foolish. Little dull to understand things. Better I tackle the things myself. They feel like that. So the shyness is going off as age is passing. So there is a restriction also between man and woman in the Vedic times. In fact, that reporter was talking to Prabhupada and asking, why are you saying that woman, you know, become a burden on the government and, you know, she needs the support of man? What if a woman supports man? A man can cook at home and clean, wash the clothes and clean the home and all, and woman can go to job and earn money and come. She was asking. And Prabhupada said, there are innumerable problems I can tell you about that. First you answer my question, Prabhupada said. And then he was fixing on that one point, that only woman can become pregnant, man cannot become pregnant. He was sticking to that point. But Prabhupada also explains elsewhere that when women also are given education. See, Shastras, when they say women are, in some places Prabhupada writes, women are less intelligent in one place. It may be very pinching and pricking and painful for women to hear such a statement in Bhagavad Gita purport. One reads that. But it will be more pricking to us if we identify with the material body. Like one disciple of Prabhupada went to Prabhupada and asked, Prabhupada, these men are saying that, you know, we are less intelligent. Is it true? And Prabhupada said, yes. And then after some time, Prabhupada said, if you think you are woman, if you think you are woman, then you are less intelligent. You are not woman. You are not man. You are a spirit soul. On a spiritual platform, all spirit souls are equal in quality. The bodies are simply like different dresses. Like we are all differently dressed. Some are dressed in saffron, some are dressed in white, some are dressed in sari. And different people are differently dressed. But inside this dress, there is a similar type of body. So Prabhupada said, in the same way, all the bodies are like dresses. And the spirit souls are similar in quality. Not that one spirit soul is superior in quality to another spirit soul. The soul in the body of a man is more superior to the soul in the body of a woman. No, there is no difference. Prabhupada was wonderfully explaining like that. So, what if a woman assumes equality and also is given a similar position in society? That time Prabhupada was telling how the woman liberation movement was tricked by man in order to have women freely available for their enjoyment. Prabhupada says that. Actually the woman liberation movement was started by man. It wasn't Mahila Sabha and all was not started by woman, it was started by man. And if you compare the dignity and respect given for a woman in the Vedic times and in modern times, you will see such a big difference. You will find. Like the Parda system, Prabhupada says here, many people think it was brought by Mohammedans due to the 700 years of rule in India, and that's why women are wearing saris covering their head. Prabhupada says it is foolishness. This was there from the dawn of creation. It comes along with Varnashrama Dharma. If somebody is following Varnashrama, they will also know these things far long before Mohammedans knew this Parada system. It was there in the Vedic times also, that women should cover their head. Women should be dressed in a way that makes them earn respect from man. And and not like the modern woman, as Prabhupada is explaining here in this purport. So when women also, like some women are arguing nowadays, just see, women are so intelligent. Most of the computer courses, women are topping the class. First three ranks go to the woman only. Boys are appearing to be dull in front of them. So who is intelligent? Are women not intelligent than man? So because people think that it is this type of intelligence that is being spoken in the Vedas, that goes to show how one is having a very foolish, superficial idea of the statement made in the Vedas. As far as material education is concerned, women probably are more intelligent in cramming and remembering things. And they can remember a lot. Probably they may even understand the material subjects better than many of the modern boys whose minds are wound up in movies and parties and other things. They may be very intelligent. But when Vedas are talking about disintelligent, they mean something else. They say women have a vama svabhavam. This is used in connection to Draupadi. Vama svabhavam means they have a particular type of soft nature, like children, that makes them innocently put faith in man. And in many cases, foolishly put faith in man. They can get easily exploited when they are let loose, if they are not properly protected. Kulakshaye pranashyanti kuladharma sanatanaha dharme nashte kulam krishnam adharmabhi bhavatyuta. Adharmabhi bhavat krishna pradushyanti kulastriyaha strishu dushtasu varshneya jayate varna sankaraha. He says there, strishu dushtasu varshneya. He says that the woman can become polluted and contaminated by some men in society if they are let loose. If they are not protected by the father or by the husband or by the son, they have to be protected. Because they have a very tender nature, their body is tender and their mind is tender and pliable, and they put faith very easily. And the Shastras also explains that the woman's material mentality is so molded by material nature that they have a kind of eagerness for sense gratification or increasing the material welfare. For example, one boy had called me to see his newly purchased house, one of our youth forum boys. So I went to his house to see, because he called me to visit to do some kirtan. So I saw the whole house was kali, empty. You know, there were about 5-6 rooms in the house. I went to the drawing room, it was empty. I went to the kitchen, different places, there was nothing anywhere. And he was living alone, like a yogi living in a forest. There was nothing. There was no furniture, no table, no chairs. And I asked him, you know, where do you sleep? And he showed me a chatai was there, one corner. So that is the way he was living. And then after some few months, he got married, and then again he invited, please come. So after 6 months or 1 year, when I went, as soon as I entered the first room, I found there was a big showcase, you know, with so many dolls and everything kept. A friend, there was table, there was chair, there were sofa sets, there was fridge, there was TV, there were so many things for that. Any room you go, there was flower vase, kept, there were so many pictures put up on the wall and everything. Then I understood how, as soon as one is married, a woman knows how to expand the material life. But if she's a devotee, then she can spiritualize the house. Otherwise, a woman's mentality is created in such a way that she will expand material life. If she is not elevated in spiritual consciousness, if she is not spiritual minded, she will tend to... That is why you find many husbands, sometimes their pockets become empty before 15th. And they don't know how to manage the next 15 days. Sometimes women say, you take a loan. Nowadays loans are available. Nowadays credit cards are available. You go on taking credit cards and keep on purchasing. So in this way, sometimes a man is unable to say no to a wife who may emotionally blackmail him. It becomes a big problem unless he elevates her spiritually. So this mentality is certainly material mentality. We are not talking about the spirit souls. We are talking from a material point of view. From a material point of view, that kind of desire for sense gratification, desire for expanding material life, That is there in the psychology of woman. It is created like that. Sometimes a man takes a woman to a shop to see some saris. After seeing 100 saris, they will not be satisfied. They will say, take me to another shop now. Because, you know, seeing more variety, more finer, more, how to create better and better material, finer facilities. Finer and finer material facilities to have luxury and enjoyment in life. Of course, the same woman, if she is elevated very spiritually, see the example of Devahuti, who was the daughter of the king of the whole world, Swayambhu Manu. When she was married to a great ascetic in the forest, Kardamamuni, so she did not complain at all. She was living under a tree, in those days they were wearing tree bark and very simple dresses. You can imagine how can she live under a tree with no comforts, no luxuries, leave alone luxuries, even basic comforts, no proper facility to live. But she was living, she was serving, and her whole body became emaciated because of lack of basic facilities. So when a woman becomes spiritually advanced, then she will become a sadhvi. She will become a spiritualist. And then she will, then she goes to spiritual platform. Then there is no difference between man and woman on that platform. When she is very advanced, she can live like an ascetic with very simple facilities. So when a woman, in what sense are they considered less intelligent? Because they can become cheated by a man very easily. You see, there is a weakness for every living being. For a man, there is weakness in his eyes. Because the beautiful form of a woman can deteriorate the intelligence of man. Sometimes a man is married to a wife, but he is not satisfied with the beauty of his wife. He is looking at another young girl who is very beautiful. You see, there is no end in this world to lust. Lust is such a crazy, it makes monsters out of men and witches out of women, they said. So we'll become witches and monsters because of lust. Even if one is married, one wants more enjoyment from another woman. So for a man, the lust is in the eyes. So if one focuses on the beauty of a woman, a man can become lusty. And if a woman becomes lenient with him, then he can do things that are very damaging to himself, damaging to her, and damaging to society. Strishu dushtasu varshneya jayate varna sankraha, he says. Nowadays, you know, men and women are asking, what's wrong if you shake hands? You know, we are shaking hands with man. Man and man shaking hands and man and woman shaking hands is not the same. There's a big difference. More men are interested in shaking hands only with women. And for men, they say, hi. Isn't it? Because there is a sex appeal in that. That is why there is separation given in the Vedas for man and woman. Because everything will begin with a handshake and end in abortion. If it is not stopped at some point of time. Because once the man knows woman is a bit lenient, and woman sometimes become lenient with a man who provides her facilities and gifts. A man offers her gifts, offers her more and more enjoyment and luxuries, and she thinks, I will not get too close to him, but I will trick him by showing a bit of leniency. And she becomes little more lenient, at one point of time this man will cheat her. And she will impregnate her and he will go away and she will be left behind with a child. Then she is left between two options. Either to chase after him and get his shelter or to go for aborting the child. Just see. That's a plight. So, it's a real story which happened in one of the computer companies. That a girl, a young girl who joined the company, and she was actually married. She was almost I think she was about 26 or 27 and her husband was about 32 years or so. So she was working in the company and her boss suddenly one day asked her, would you like to marry me? And the boss was already 38 or 40. She asked, what do you mean? You are married and I am married. You are asking, can you marry me? What nonsense is this? Because they were working on a project for a long period of time and that way they got to know each other's temperament, mentality, you know, they got closer to one another. And the boss said, no, if you say yes, then it's not a serious problem. I can divorce my wife and you can divorce your husband and we both can marry. And she said, how can I divorce my husband? You know, He is faithful to me in all respects. He is taking care of me and everything. And the husband and this boss was asking, how much is he earning? She said, he doesn't earn much. He is not very educated. He is just earning some 10,000-12,000 rupees. How much are you earning? She said, I am earning 40,000-50,000 rupees. Then just see, you are earning 40,000, I am earning 80,000. We will be a good match. Your husband is not, from a monetary point of view, he is useless to satisfy you. And I can satisfy you. You know, we can have a Mercedes-Benz car, I can give you an independent row house or a bungalow. Can provide you facilities, why don't you marry me? Can you imagine? So when she tried to divorce her husband, he reacted very vehemently. He did not allow her to divorce him. He proved in the court that he is right in all respects. And then she went to her boss and said, and boss said, I will give you some evil, wicked ideas by which you can trick your husband to get divorced from him. And then she started telling lies about her husband in the court so that she can divorce him. That fellow became totally frustrated and he started coming to her temple here. Yeah, with a long beard and, you know, long hair. So he came and told me that I want to commit suicide. Asked him why, then he told me the whole story. So immediately I could understand what is the problem in women going for jobs. Then I understood why in the Vedic times women were kept in the home. This is the main reason. Because women are tender and women's beauty is a big danger to the other men in society. Even if men are married, they will still be looking at beautiful women. And if they are looking at women, they are going to do something more. They are not going to stop there. So women should not be freely available for men to mishandle in society. That's why the Vedas say women should be at home serving the husband. In fact, in the Vedic times there were joint family and all women will live in the Andarvadi. Andarvadi means in the central portion of the house. And all the men will live in the Baharvadi, which is the outside portion of the house. Why? There is a reason for that also. Like for example, if there are four or five brothers in a family, you know, elder brother is very intelligent in business or something. Younger brother is little dull. Then the elder brother will set up a business for the younger brother. They will all help, you know, help each other and complement each other. That was one purpose, to be together. Another purpose was, the lust is so dormant in man's heart, that if a man and woman are living alone in the family, one will just foolishly at any time will want to have sex. Morning, afternoon, evening, night, just like dogs and cats, they have no regulation. Just like Diti and Kashyapa. Kashyapa told her that if you have sex in the evening twilight hours, then a Rakshasa pravritti soul will come and occupy. And that is how Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were born. So that is why in Andarvadi all the women were together and Baharvadi all the men were together. They were allowed to live together only in the night. Otherwise daytime the women will be together and they will all be sharing, because women have a particular nature of talking and they will be able to, you know, talk to other women and be satisfied and feel comfortable. But a man can never satisfy a woman by his talking, because man's psychology is totally different. Man is oriented towards solutions and women are oriented towards emotions. So that is why many husband wives who are living in a nuclear family, you know, when a husband comes back from the office in the evening to home, there's no one at home except the wife and child. So naturally they try to, you know, throw each other's expectations on each other and then they end up in a big quarrel. But in the Vedic times this wonderful planning is done. Women are together, men are together, they are very happy. Women feel that they are all like my sisters, I can share, and man feels you know, very secure that my brothers will help me in my business. And they are also allowed to live with their wives at a certain period of time. Like, you know, boy and girl, they were married when a girl was just 8 or 10 years old. They were married. But they were not allowed to live together. After marriage, they were separated again. And the girl will go back to her mother's home and learn all the necessary things. Like how to cook, how to clean, how to take care of husband, children, everything. And then the boy also studies shastras, takes training from guru. And at a certain time, when she attains puberty, at the right time, they are again brought together. But before they are brought together, there are occasions when the girl will be cooking some nice preparations, what her husband likes, and she was allowed to go to the husband's house and give those preparations and come. So that way she will develop, she will also remember that I have a husband, I should not think of anyone else. And she will also develop love for him by occasionally meeting him. You see, when you separate them and occasionally allow to meet them, in a regulated way, that also helps them in enhancing the love that they have between one another. And then at the right time, they are allowed to live together. And then there is children. 1, 2, 3, 4 children you have. And then by the time they become 20, 22, 24, now there is no more interest in family life. Then they are focused on spiritual life. But today you see, you know, girls become 27, 28, 30, 32. There, many times, the marriage is not done. Even the boys, sometimes waiting till 30, 35, 40. Some people are considering marriage even after 45. So it becomes too late. Imagine if somebody is marrying at 45 and begetting a son. So you'll have a small boy when he's 50. Panchasya urdhvam manam rajat. How can he go to forest at 40? Leaving a 5-year-old boy behind. But in Vedic time, you see, if a family gets a child when they are 18 years old, like you will find, in South India I have especially seen, somebody looks like a young girl, she has 4 children. She is just 18 years, she has 4 children. And now we can imagine the last child, you know, by the time the mother becomes 50, how much will be the age of the child? 32. She can get to see her great-grandchildren also. So how many of you have seen your great-grandfather? Anybody? Oh, really? See, he's from South India. Andhra Pradesh. From Andhra. In Andhra, they get them married by 20 only. 20-21. You will see that. Isn't it? Your grandfather's father. It's very rare to see. So why it was done? There are many reasons for this. Why? Because the sex is a very great pull and push. It's a very, very powerful force in this world. As Prabhupada explains here, you see, in the second part, the material beauty of woman is an illusion. Because actually the body is made up of earth, water, fire, air, ether, etc. The woman's body, man's body, what is the difference? Both the bodies have 9 holes and both the bodies are emitting all secretions. Both the bodies are made up of flesh and bones and stool, urine, bile, all these things. What is the difference? There is no difference. Both the bodies are similar. But unfortunately, the illusioned soul, he becomes attracted to the beauty of the opposite sex. See, this has a history, this has a root. In the spiritual world, when Krishna wants to experience rasa, he expands as Srimati Radharani. Krishna's pleasure takes the form of Srimati Radharani. There is no difference between Krishna and Radha. They are the same person. But Krishna's own pleasure potency, that takes the form of Srimati Radharani. And Krishna associates with his own pleasure and he is very happy. He is blissful. So, when Radha and Krishna perform romance, that becomes a central theme of the spiritual world for all the gopis and gopas and cows and calves, for all of them to relish and appreciate and glorify that supreme spiritual romance. But romance in this world is very short-lived. Romance is very charming. Writing a love letter, a boy writing to a girl and girl writing to a boy. But that romance is for 1 or 2 or 3 years or 4 years, and after marriage all that is forgotten. And man, woman, all of them become old. The beauty doesn't remain in this world. That's what Prabhupada is saying. This material beauty is simply an illusion in this world. And because there is male and female form in the spiritual world, in this material world also, all the souls who are all feminine by nature, they are given male body and a female body. Lord makes the souls in his own image. So one soul is told, now you are a male. Another soul is told, now you are a female. You are in a female body. So then they think that this body is made for my enjoyment. So it's illusion. If one can have an X-ray vision to see that the man's body is the illusion, woman's body is the illusion, they will be able to see that the souls are of similar quality. If you know what is avidya, clearly. That's why he says, the material beauty of a woman is an illusion, because actually the body is made of earth, water, all these things. But because there is association of the living spark with matter, it appears to be beautiful. Even the most beautiful actor or actress, if the spirit soul leaves their body, nobody will appreciate the beauty of that body. Because it simply turns into stool and urine or a pile of ashes. So there is no more beauty there. So the beauty comes because of the presence of the spirit soul. But this understanding will not come for a common man very easily. That is why the separation is kept between man and woman. Because it's like butter and fire principle, explained here. When they come together, gritakumbam ivapakaha, it's explained. Gritakumbam means that's just like a butter and fire. If they are brought together, they'll be melting. So when man and woman are brought together due to the illusion, actually there is an intense attachment between Krishna and the living entities. But that same attachment is now in the opposite direction now, towards the opposite sex. So foolishly, if one allows free mixing with woman, then that kind of material attachment will burn both the parties. That is why that kind of separation is made. So the purpose of the Vedas, telling that let woman remain at home and man go for work, and let the man be educated and the woman be educated in other fields, like raising the child and taking care of the homely affairs. So those things are said in the Vedas. Why? If both the people try to be equal and not become subordinate to... There should be one, like just like we said, manager and secretary. If that kind of understanding is agreed upon, then the family can be very happy, according to the Vedas. And if a woman is chaste, then husband also becomes her, like her servant. It's like a relationship between Krishna and the living entities, isn't it? Just like, you know, you depend on Krishna and you surrender to him, and Krishna provides everything for you. And then you say, no, I will be a imitator of Krishna. I will be imitation Krishna like pound rag. What happened to pound rag? Pound rag was finished. Isn't it? If the living entity wants to become enjoyer, controller, proprietor, equal to Krishna, then the living entity cannot flourish. He will suffer. Then he becomes bahirmukh to Krishna. Isn't it? But if the living entity becomes subordinate to Krishna, then by his subordination, he brings Krishna under his control. Just like Arjuna is able to have Krishna as the driver of his chariot. So, such a wonderful program Vedas are giving. Both husband and wife feel, I am servant of the other person. I want to help the other person in this particular model which the Vedas are giving. When wife is subordinate to the husband. And if a husband is surrendered to Guru, he will never think that his wife is subordinate to him. He will always weigh her. So this is very amazing, isn't it? Like I've seen, my mother is almost an illiterate. She had studied only up to some 7th or 8th standard. And my father has a dozen degrees. But still, I would see many times the kind of respect he has for her. I used to be very amazed. Because that's a typical Vedic family. Although he is very intelligent, he is very shrewd, he can do many things on his own. He will never do anything without asking the wife. And every time we will ask her, she will say, what do I know? I don't know anything. Whatever you do, whatever you want to do is all right. Like my father asked, what do you want your son to become? Engineer or doctor? And she doesn't know either, you know. She said, no, whatever you think for him is all right. No, I'm asking you, you tell me. She would say, no. Whatever is perfect, because you know better. So you will find this is Vedic life. You know, wife becomes subordinate to husband, and husband is so pleased with her subordination that he weighs her opinions. But modern times, woman is raising her nose, considering husband to be a fool, and husband is raising his nose, and both of them are quarreling, you can see that. Because the shyness is not there. Woman feel, what is the need of shyness? Women are wearing, nowadays they are also wearing pant, and they are also wearing shirt like men. And Prabhupada says that why women also want to wear dress like man, because they want to prove themselves to be equal to man on a material platform, which is actually foolishness. On a material platform, we don't have to prove that we are equal. Nobody is equal on a material platform. Even between man and man, you see, one man is not the same as another man on a material plane. Somebody is short, somebody is tall, somebody is fat, somebody is thin, somebody is black, somebody is fair. Why should a black man put, you know, one inch thick, fair and lovely, and go to a white man and say, I am also white, you know? He doesn't have to prove to anyone. So, this type of struggling for artificial equality on a material platform will never bring peace and happiness to anyone. So, if you study the principles given in the Vedas, they are very deep and well thought out, very profound, and they are actually word of God, repeated by the sages all through the Vedic literatures. So, Srila Prabhupada, taking these things with him, he went to the West. You can imagine how difficult it must have been for Prabhupada to explain these concepts and principles. In India, there is some remnants of the Vedic culture still prevalent. Still women wear saris, they cover their head, they have shyness and they have respect for husband and father-in-law and mother-in-law and all that. They have that in Indian culture. It's very easy to preach in India and they will understand it very easily. Like, you know, one woman from America came to India. Her main goal was to write a book on how in the Vedic times women are downplayed. And they are, women are downplayed and they are not respected. They are, their growth is stunted. And they are not allowed to express their opinions. There is no freedom of speech or thought or action. So she wanted to prove that. With that idea she came. So when she came to Indian cities, like Bombay, Calcutta, Delhi and other places, she found that the Indian women were quite like Western women in many places. She found that. Then she thought, here it is, you know, my work will not happen because these women are as independent as me, you know. So she thought, better let me go to villages. So she went to the Indian villages because India mostly lives in villages even today. Even after the invasion of Mughals and invasion of British, even after acquiring independence, still India lives in villages. So when she went to village, she found that a farmer's wife, the farmer had gone for his job in the field. And there was farmer's wife cooking at home, you know, she was doing this, what do you call it? Grinding on a stone thing, you know. So this woman first met her and, you know, started interviewing her. She said, no, you have to stay at home and, you know, you have to do all this grinding. You know, it's so painful, isn't it? So do you feel your husband is torturing you and all? She was asking. Then that woman started speaking, which was a big revelation to this Western woman. Because the wife was, the girl who was at home, she was so happy. She was glorifying her husband so much. And she was so happy with the household activities. Because women are fond of activities, and there is so much to do at home. Right from morning to evening can keep doing. There is cleaning, there is washing. That's why they are called as a homemaker. Nowadays they call them as a homemaker. There is a course on homemaking, you know that? Home science they call it. There is so much to do. If Vedas are teaching, you say, you know, they are making women subordinate. But in modern times, they call it very decently as home science, because there is so much to do at home. If women don't do, then men have to do. Or they have to share and do. Like most women, you see, they will say, I am also going for a job and you are going for a job. Come, let us both cook together. Let us both wash together. Let us both. So that's what it happens in many places. Of course, it's not that in Vedic times, men would never do any job. They would also fetch water and they would do some things. But in general, woman would take care of the home. Complete care of the home was in the hands of woman. So this village woman was so satisfied in her heart that the Western woman was flabbergasted. She could not believe. She even tried to tell her, see, your husband is taking a superior role. Why should you hear his opinion? Why don't you give your opinion? This woman laughed and said, what nonsense? Why should I worry? He will do everything. He is taking care of me and he will do everything. So later on, this woman had a transformation of heart and she wrote a book on how the Vedic culture is very glorious. So the Vedic culture doesn't insist so much that woman should be subordinate to man. That is not the main theme. The main theme is Krishna consciousness. How both woman and man can become transcendental. So Srila Prabhupada said, he was telling the reporters, that come and look in our temple. The men are dancing happily. The women are dancing. Children are dancing. Old people are dancing. And everyone is dancing very, very happily for the pleasure of the Lord. Just see. So they are not just dancing like a dog in the street, but they are dancing in transcendental ecstasy. They are dancing in spiritual ecstasy. In such dancing, they have completely forgotten whether I am a man, I am a woman, I am a child, I am an old man. They know only one thing. I am Prakriti. I am servant of Krishna. That's all they know. And I am dancing for the pleasure of the divine couple, Radha and Krishna. So they don't have any arguments, who is superior. Men are superior, women are superior. No, they don't even talk about that. There is no question of that. Because in a spiritual platform, there are only two genders in spiritual platform, Purusha and Prakriti, Lord and the living entities. On a material platform, in the Prakriti itself, there are two genders. There is Purusha and Prakriti, the imitation Purusha. And that is why the problem, that is why the quarrel between people. And what Prabhupada says is very, very true. I have seen great sannyasis dealing with Matajis in a very respectful way. And giving them recognition, giving them appreciation. I have seen that. Like, you know, once as soon as Radhanath Swami Maharaj was telling, great children have great mothers. So he was appreciating one devotee, and then in the appreciation of that devotee, he was also appreciating his mother also, who was a disciple of Prabhupada. Also, although she, you know, she is apparently insignificant, she is always in the background. But Maharaj was appreciating her also. So I have seen that in our society, women are given great respect, because if they are treated as spirit souls, as devotees of Krishna, and if they also follow the etiquettes that are being taught here, such wonderful etiquettes are being taught by Srila Prabhupada. It's a culture. It's not just one small thing. It's a whole culture. Culture of a man, culture of a woman, culture of children, how they should deal with the elders, superiors. So these are all very vital and important formalities and items to be adopted in one's life. Without adopting which, actually our spiritual life will not be complete. It will be incomplete, or we will be performing our spiritual life in a half-baked way, if you don't understand these principles properly. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Kuntra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki. Thank you very much.